Hey, and welcome to this week's episode of the Your Pet Business, Your Way podcast. I'm your host, Rachel Spencer, and this week on the podcast, I'm going to be talking to you about whether qualifications matter to you and to your clients as a pet professional. So this podcast is for you if you have a pet business and you want to do things your way. You want to step away from all of the things that we're always being told that you should or must or have to do and figure out how to run your pet business in a way that feels right for you, that feels good, and can be something that you enjoy as well. So each week on the podcast, I talk about lots of different things from marketing your pet business to mindset to interviews with brilliant pet business owners where they share their stories, which will inspire you and give you ideas for your pet business to move things forward as well. So this is a topic that I've wanted to record a podcast about for absolutely ages, and it's about qualifications and whether qualifications matter. Now, the idea first came to me probably about coming up to a year ago. I'm recording this in June 2024. About a year ago, I did a brilliant interview with a lady called Jane Arden. And one of the things that she said to me during that interview, we were talking about marketing, and we were talking about imposter syndrome. And she's a very established dog trainer. And one of the things I asked her for her advice for, you know, up and coming people in the pet professional space, and her advice for them in building their confidence. And one of the things she said to me was, get good at what you do and then get better. And it really stuck with me, because we talked about how some people are good at marketing and some people are good at the thing that they do, and some people are good at both of those things as well. Some people are really qualified in marketing, some people are really qualified in the area where they work, whether that's cat grooming, whether it's dog training, whether it's horse handling, whatever it is that they do. Some people train in their art, and then some people focus on marketing. And what she was saying was, a lot of the time imposter syndrome can come from the fact that you aren't as qualified as you would like to be. And that's what kind of sowed the seed to talking about this topic about qualifications. It also, thank you, Jane, for the hold of my bank balance, inspired me to go and invest a lot of money in doing some more coaching training, because I actually found that I was listening to Jane and thinking, I don't feel as confident as I should do as a coach, even though I am qualified and I've done a lot of learning, a lot of studying, a lot of practice. I'd like to get better. So I decided to invest in taking my level 7 qualification. And that's what I'm doing right now at the moment. I've just literally, as I've plugged in this microphone, finished working on the first part of one of my assignments, and I've written about 5,000 words. So yes, I'm definitely trying to get good at what I do and then get better, as Jane very wisely said. Anyway, I digress a little bit, but that is the reason behind this podcast episode. And the other thing that gave me the nudge to record this is because I was in a Facebook group. It wasn't a pet Facebook group, actually. It was a general business Facebook group that I'm in. And there was this lady who posted in there, and she was a coach, and she talked about how she was going on LinkedIn, and she was talking about the work that she's doing, and she was doing all of the things that we're told that we should do on LinkedIn, you know, talking about client work, talking about her expertise, talking about the results that she was getting, talking about her qualifications, talking about studying, all that kind of thing. She was really she'd worked really hard in her business, she'd done lots of studying, she'd invested in a lot of training. And somebody piped up and said, nobody cares about your qualifications. All they care about is your results. And then other people piled in and said, yeah, it's not about, you know, why are you going on about how qualified you are? All people care about is results. And it really struck a chord with me, because I felt for this woman. She'd really invested, and maybe she had some confidence issues as well. Maybe she was a bit like me. She'd obviously really invested, worked really, really hard. And I felt, I've really felt for her, because, you know, I just thought it must be really frustrating, you know, to put so much into something and really want to be good at what you do, and then just to have that kind of radio silence when you put sales posts out there, and to be told that people just care about your results. And I understand there's a point in that as well. Like, yes, she should be sharing her testimonials, she should be sharing her client stories, she should be talking about how she's helping people. She probably is doing that anyway, but it was just this kind of emphasis on all people care about is results. And I don't believe that myself. And I'm going to talk about this in the podcast episode as we go through lots of different things around this topic. So that is the topic for today. Do qualifications matter? I'd love to know your thoughts on this as well. I will put all the links to connect with me in the show notes. So what I want to talk about is how we feel about, you know, those quick wins and those easy results. Because on the one hand, we want those quick wins, don't we? We want those easy results. But then on the other hand, we can you know, look at something like dogs behaving very badly on the telly and think that's really unfair, because all we're seeing is 10 minutes of that dog's journey. You know, 1 minute they're going absolutely berserk every time the doorbell rings, or they're, you know, going crazy at other dogs in the park, or they won't go out the front door, and then the next minute they've got his goal trotting along and they've got that amazing transformation. Now, I'm not here to slag off Graham Hall or dogs behaving badly. That's not what this podcast is about. But the fact is, there's no way that transformation has happened in 10 minutes. You know, Graham Hall or whoever it is on the telly will have been working with that family and that animal for a long, long time, but they can't put in the whole situation. They can't put in the whole story, because it doesn't make good telly, does it? So on the one hand, we know that we want, you know, we all want quick fixes sometimes in our lives, don't we? If we look at Graham Hall as an example, you know, he goes on, you know, you turn on the telly, you watch his show, a dog's been really terrified of going outside, or they're, you know, they're very reactive when they're on walks, they're dragging their owners here, there and everywhere, and then, you know, they return in the next part of that episode and they're being good as gold, and isn't it brilliant? Well, yes, of course it is brilliant, but the fact is, we know that the reality is that things take a lot longer. Again, let's have a look at, you know, the fast results when it comes to things like weight loss. You know, there's drugs out there at the moment, like Wegovy and Ozempic. Like, I am 48 and I feel like I'm quite a sensible person. I've got so many friends who are using these, or I know so many people who are using these injections, and they were meant to treat diabetes, but now they're being used, they're being bought. You know, you can go and get them in clinics, you can buy them on the internet. People who do not have diabetes and are not the people who these drugs were designed for, they're not obese, they don't have health problems where they need to inject themselves, they're using these drugs because we want rapid weight loss. I just think it's absolutely insane. But we want those fast results. Then we've got self-help books. They often promise to transform your life within 30 days. We all know that it's always going to take a little bit longer than 30 days to have any transformation, but we go and buy these things. I'm not saying we, you know, everybody listening goes and injects themselves with the Ozempic, or they buy books that they feel will transform their lives in 30 days. But that's the world that we're in, isn't it? We have this desire for a quick fix, but do they really give the best outcome? And is there such a thing as a quick fix? I think we all know really that there isn't, don't we? So let's next look at, you know, sustainable results. So if we look at, you know, the Graham Hall example where a dog's transformed in 10 minutes on a TV program, again, we know that's not true. We know that's not an accurate portrayal of what happens on that TV show. One of my clients has been on that TV show. She worked with a dog for a very long time, but it was only a very short snippet that was shown. So we know that what we see on telly is only a snapshot of what really happens. So let's contrast it with a real life scenario. One of my clients, she's called Zoe. She runs Best Behaviour Dog Training. One of the things that she does is, she phrases it much better than me, but she does lifelong learning with her clients. And she was telling me the other day, we were having a one-to-one call, that she has dogs who've been attending her training classes since they were puppies. And one of these dogs is now 16 and she still goes to Zoe's training class. She still wags her tail like crazy every time she sees her. She's still learning. And isn't that wonderful? That owner, that lovely dog, they haven't just thought, oh, we're going to go and see Zoe for 6 weeks for the puppy classes. They're there 16 years later and they've got that incredible relationship. And isn't that wonderful? So that just goes to show, yes, we might see a transformation in 10 minutes, but the fact is, you can learn with your dog for many, many years. As I was saying at the beginning of this episode, I'm invested in my coaching training. I'm always learning something, but right now I'm like literally got my head in about 27 books and it's like being back at school, and I'm 48. So, you know, we can be learning throughout our lives, like this lovely dog who Zoe's working with. When I was talking about Ozempic and Wegovy, probably pronounced it wrong, but anyway, you know, these injections where you can have rapid weight loss, you know, yeah, that's a quick fix. I wanted to lose about a stone about a year, probably 2 years ago now, mainly because I just felt a little bit sluggish and a little bit rubbish. I was drinking too much, eating too much, eating the wrong foods. Clothes weren't fitting me. So I decided I was going to go and join Slimming World. And I had the goal of losing like between 9 pounds and a stone. I got to 9 pounds, I think, after 18 months. And it was really annoying because I'd sometimes go to Slimming World and some people would have lost loads of weight in a week. And I'm like, why does it take me so long to lose like 1 pound? And then I only actually got to losing the 4 stone because I stopped drinking after me and Tommy split up. Decided to stop drinking for a few months, and that is what made the difference. But the fact was, I was going to Slimming World, I was going to the meetings, I was using the app, I was aware of what I was eating and, you know, what I was drinking and what impact that would have on me. And it was a long game. And I also know that I have protected my health by doing it that way. And I think as if I was using a weight loss injection and something that isn't designed for me, I would worry about the impact of that on my health. And then if we think about habits, you know, transform your life in 30 days, a study by University College London found it takes 66 days to start a new habit. And that's just to start a new habit. It might be, you know, doing a workout every morning or journaling, not completely transforming your life. So I hope those examples show that, you know, real sustainable results take time, effort, and, you know, you've got to be in there, haven't you? So I've talked about that, and it's completely off topic when it comes to qualifications, but I'm going to go back to the topic of the podcast now. But I just wanted to put that across, really, because actually maybe you don't want to be working with people who want quick fixes. Maybe you do want to be working with people who are going to be in it for the long game, and they are going to be the kind of people who will want to know about your qualifications. So next, let's have a look at pet owners. I was trying to find some research on, you know, do qualifications matter as a pet professional? I was looking for some studies, and I was struggling. But what I did find was some information from a presentation. I'll link to it in the show notes. It's on veterinarypractice.com website. There's an article there. You can go and find it in the show notes. And it's a report taken from a presentation about preventative healthcare and the Gen Z client from the London Vet Show 2022. And what they talked about was around the importance of pet professionals being qualified. And there was a lady called Marnie Brennan, who is a professor in epidemiology at the University of Nottingham. I probably pronounced that really badly. But one of the things that she talked about was, you know, what Gen Z and millennials expect when they go into the vet practice. And with them basically being, you know, they account for 2/3 of, near enough, of the pet owning population, we need to be thinking about, like, these people and what it is that they're looking for. She talked about how Gen Z and millennials have a focus on client-centered care, and they want to, she referred to assisting someone in developing that knowledge and skills and confidence to make informed decision about what goes on in their animal, in their pet. She was talking about vets in this situation, but she was talking about, you know, they want to understand, they want to have the skills, knowledge and confidence to make informed decisions. And it's really important, obviously, if they're going to a vet, they're going to be qualified. But the fact is that these people really want to understand their animals. They really want to know what's going on. And they are more likely to ask questions, to question your credentials and voice their concerns and want to know the ins and outs, basically, of a duck's backside. So if you want to be working with millennials, then I think it's going to be really important, because they're 2/3 of the pet only population, that you have, that you are qualified and you can cite these qualifications, and think qualifications are going to be important for you if that is, you know, a demographic that you want to be working with. So I think it's just something that I wanted to highlight, really. If you are thinking that qualifications, you know, if you're thinking about qualifications and you're thinking about whether they matter or not, because, if, you know, if that's the case, then that's probably why you've clicked on this podcast. So that's some stats on Gen Z and millennials. Let's now look at, like, levels of qualification in the pet industry. This is such a broad topic. There are so many different elements of the pet industry. Obviously, I'm talking more about service providers here, but even as a product maker, you know, it's probably going to be good for you to demonstrate your credentials as well, and qualifications, accreditations, and that kind of thing. Trying to speak as broadly as possible, I probably will refer to things like dog trainers and, you know, carers, that kind of thing, in this episode. But I think it's really key to understand that qualifications give, you know, they show that you've got a solid foundation of knowledge and skills. But the other thing is that not all qualifications are the same. So, like, let's look at the different types of qualifications and that you can have in the pet industry. You know, at the top, we've got university degrees. You know, vets study at uni for many, many, many years. As an animal behaviourist, you might have studied at uni for 3 or more years. That's going to give you a really in-depth knowledge, practical experience, and be a really comprehensive level of education. But at the other end of the spectrum, we've got online courses where you can click on a Facebook ad for £30 and you can go and have a piece of paper, you know, within half a day saying that you're a dog trainer or you're a dog walker or an expert in nutrition or that kind of thing. And this is, yeah, they're easy. But they don't have the depth and the hands-on practice that you might need when you're going out into the world and working with, you know, mega reactive, great big German Shepherds, that kind of thing. So I think it's important that you, if you're looking at education and training, to find credible training providers. Again, this is not going to be a full list. What I would say to you to do is, if you are unsure where to start, ask around and find recommendations from people that you admire, people who you look up to. Go and ask who they trained with. Go and ask who they would recommend. Again, I am not a pet professional. I am a coach and I work with people in the pet industry. I'm going to mention a few organisations here, but this is not an exhaustive list. And it does not mean that if you've trained with another organisation that your accreditation qualifications are any less. So I'm just going to mention a few here. We've got the National Pet College, which is linked to the Pet Industry Federation, iPet Network, we've got the College of Animal Welfare, we've got organisations like City and Guilds, we've got universities across the country that have pet-related courses and qualifications. Other acronyms and organisations to look at are the Association of Pet Dog Trainers, the APDT. That's a membership based on practical assessments and theoretical knowledge. They promote training skills and techniques based on up-to-date research methods that are all around kindness, fairness and effectiveness. We've got the Association of Pet Behaviour Counsellors, which is the APBC. That's an international network of behaviour counsellors with the highest proven academic and practical standards in companion animal behaviour therapy. Then we've got the Animal Behaviour and Training Council. I'm not very good with the acronyms, which is the ABTC. This is a regulatory body that sets and maintains standards of knowledge and practical skills for trainers and behaviour therapists. Clinical animal behaviourists are the highest level within the ABTC. And then we've got the Pet Professional Guild as well. That represents pet industry professionals who are committed to force-free training methods. There's also the Institute of Modern Dog Trainers, the IMDT. This focuses on modern science-based training methods. The membership there, it requires practical and theory assessments. And then there is the Professional Association of Canine Trainers. Again, they promote excellence in dog training and behaviour, requiring members to meet high standards of practice and continue their education. So that is not a list of all of the organisations. That is a snapshot into some of the organisations and options that are out there. But something to think about. And as I said, a really good thing to do, particularly if you're new to the industry, is go to the people who you admire and ask them for their insights, advice and support. For this next section, I want to share a little bit about my own personal journey when it comes to training and accreditations and qualifications, because it's what I talked about at the beginning of the podcast, and it's what's really actually shaped my business over the past, it's coming up to 5 years that I've been working with small businesses now. What happened with me was I found myself working with small business owners kind of by accident, really. I started a pet blog back in 2017 called thepawpost.co.uk, and that came about because I, at the time, was working as a freelance journalist. I was writing more and more about the pet industry, and I was finding that I had stories that were going to newspapers or magazines, and I always felt like the full story wasn't told. It would always be edited, and I always had more that I felt like I wanted to say. So I decided I would start my own platform where I could write as much as I wanted, and tell the story my way, where I'd have full editorial control. And what happened when that began was it did really well. Touch wood, I was really lucky to be featured in the top 10 UK pet blogs, like literally within a few months of it starting. And because of that, I had pet business owners come to me and they were interested in being on the blog. And then when they found out I was a journalist, they asked about how they could go about getting press coverage. Then I decided to write a book. Then everything just kind of snowballed into me starting a coaching business. But while I could show people how to write a press release or how to create content for the website, I don't really do social media, but I could talk about content creation and storytelling. And I'd studied digital marketing. I'd done a diploma in digital marketing back in 2016. And I'd obviously qualified as a journalist back in 1999. I was saying that I was a coach, but I hadn't trained as a coach. Now, I know that coaching, just like dog training and many other things in the industry, is completely unregulated. So anyone can call themselves a coach, and there are also, you know, coaching qualifications that you can go and find on the internet that are really quick and easy and low cost. But I decided, I felt I didn't feel right calling myself a coach when I wasn't trained. And the other thing that was coming up was, yeah, I could show people how to write a press release or how to find a journalist's contact details, but quite often there would be things going on before they got to that stage that they needed to work on around confidence, around feeling comfortable with self-promotion. And I felt like I needed more training to help people with that, because it's around mindset and lots of other things around emotions. There's so much more to it than just writing a press release and pressing send, isn't there? So I decided to go and study for a coaching and mentoring qualification so I could really make sure that I had everything in my toolkit to support my clients professionally, personally, and emotionally as well. And I did the ILM level 5 qualification. I did go and research and found a reputable body. And ILM is the Institute of Leadership and Management. It is a recognised body. The courses are very thorough. They're also quite costly and time consuming. But this qualification has given me a lot of confidence in my work. And it's also differentiated me from others. I know there are lots of coaches out there who haven't had any formal training. And while they, I am sure, are doing a brilliant job, I just feel like having this coaching experience and educational foundation means that I'm really well prepared to handle really diverse needs when it comes to my clients. I can't handle everything. I'm not a counsellor or a therapist. I can signpost them to that if they need it. But I just feel a lot better equipped to support my clients. I'm now studying for level 7 after the conversation with Jane and after me wanting to build my confidence as a coach and build on my skill set. So, you know, if you've listened to earlier episodes of the podcast, how I sound now is probably quite different. I'm a lot less directive, and I support my clients in a lot less directive way. And it's all about, yeah, I will show them what to do sometimes, but a lot of the time it's, you know, them finding the answers within themselves and me being there to support them, build the confidence, give them strategies and all of those different things. So this also brings me to a really important point. Like, for you, think about the clients you want to work with. If you want clients who are looking for the cheapest option, then, you know, that's okay. Like, and if you haven't, you know, invested loads of money in getting qualified and you are working with people who are looking for the cheapest option, then that's okay. If you don't feel like you do need to invest in being more qualified because of that, that's fine. Or do you want to work with people who are really, you know, digging into like what your qualifications are, what your credentials are? They want to see those letters on your website. They want to see those certificates when they walk into your grooming salon. They want to, you know, see you on Instagram learning at a, you know, a pet business training event. You know, they want to see that you've won awards. They want to know, they want that reassurance. They want to know that you are doing your best to be at the absolute top of your game and you're learning about new things and you are bringing them the latest methods in cat grooming or dog training or whatever it is that you do. So, you know, that's a question for you. What are the values of the clients that you want to work with? Is that important to them? So that's something for you to think about, isn't it? For me, like, I want to work with people who aren't looking for templates or quick fixes or for somebody to say, you have to do it this way. You need to post these 5 types of content. You need to post 3 times a day. You need to do this, that, and the other, or you're doing it wrong, or you know what I mean? I want people to come to me and to have conversations with me where I can help them figure things out themselves. Like, I will guide them sometimes, but I generally want to work with people who want that coaching approach, who want to be listened to, who want to be part of a really supportive community if they're working with me in my membership. And if they're working with me one-to-one, they want that sounding board. They want that person who, you know, they can talk to, who they can trust, who they can really develop their ideas with, who they can, you know, really think about building their business with, and, you know, just have those, you know, have really different conversations, really. So you're going to know about the clients you want to work with, like I know about the clients I want to work with. So that's something to consider as well. Are qualifications important for the people who you want to work with? My thoughts on why qualifications matter. You know, they just ensure that we as professionals are able to give the best care and guidance we possibly can. As I said, I've recently invested heavily in, sorry about the shaking, that was Patch, in studying for this master's level coaching accreditation. And, you know, for me, in an unregulated industry like coaching, having formal qualifications, I think, is really important for helping me stand out and also for helping me support my clients when it comes to their emotional well-being and through their life changes. I feel like it's a responsibility of mine to have that. And you might feel the same too. Okay, so let's talk about like what your training gives you. So earlier in the episode, I talked about Zoe from Best Behaviour Dog Training. She's also Zoe Willingham, dog behaviourist. Zoe is very qualified. She's always studying something. She has lots of credentials. She has lots of acronyms on her website, the ones that I was talking about earlier that I got jumbled up with. And it means that she's got the confidence to speak on topics which some people might find challenging. She goes on the radio regularly. This week she was on LBC talking about vet charges. She's on LBC fairly regularly. She's talked about controversial topics like the XL bully ban, about dog bites, about dog attacks. She talked about multi-pet households. She talked about all kinds of different things. She's, you know, when journalists go and check her out, they want to make sure that she's qualified, and they also want to make sure that she's going to be an interesting guest. She's going to have lots to say, that she's going to be articulate. And one thing I would say on this topic is I wouldn't encourage your website to just be a list of acronyms, because it's not very user-friendly, and, you know, regular dog owners will be just baffled by it and turn off. But I would definitely have your credentials, accreditations, certificates, memberships of professional bodies on your website to give that reassurance. I wouldn't kick off with, you know, I'm Zoe Willingham and I'm in the APDT, you know, as your intro, but you do have them there because this stuff is important. And if you are going to be appearing in the press, or, you know, you're putting yourself forward to talk on the radio, you're putting yourself forward as an expert, a decent journalist will want to know that you're qualified. It's like, you know, they wouldn't have a doctor on this morning if they weren't a qualified doctor. I know there's all kinds of doctor titles that you can buy on the internet, but they wouldn't have, you know, a doctor sharing health advice on this morning if they couldn't see that they had been to medical school. So just think about it like that, really. You know, qualifications really do matter when it comes to you know, putting yourself forward and wanting to be the expert. I think I read a lot about people don't. I see so much about pet owners don't care about your qualifications, and I hope that, I think that attitudes really need to be changing around this, because I think that they are, and that I know it was around vets, and it's slightly different, but, you know, the information that I shared with you about millennial pet owners and Gen Z, you know, they really care about their pets, and they are going to check you out, and they're on the internet all the time. They're so connected. Again, I'm not millennial or Gen Z, but they are so connected, and you know, you can't hide this stuff. If they're looking for this stuff, you know, you don't want to be hiding it from them. So finally, let's talk about balancing credentials and qualifications with results. I know I said at the beginning of this episode that I feel qualifications are more important, but I do think results are important as well. So don't hide your results away either. Don't feel like you shouldn't chat about your results. Don't feel like you should only share your qualifications, because it's about both, isn't it? So let's think about like how you strike that balance between highlighting your credentials and showing the results that you can deliver as well. So like build trust with your credentials, highlight your qualifications to show that you're knowledgeable and that you are credible and that you have invested in you and yourself and your learning to be the best that you can possibly be. But also showcase your results. So, you know, use those case studies, get those screenshots, use those testimonials. I've got a full episode on how to get more reviews for your pet business. If you're inside of my membership, I've got training on case studies and how to gather those and to really demonstrate the value that you can provide. And so have both. And with testimonials and case studies, the best time to get them is when somebody's had a really, really great result. For example, I did some outdoor coaching with one of my clients, Emily, from Canine Trail Time a few weeks ago. And the best time for me to have got that testimonial from her was just after the session. She sent me a testimonial a few days ago. So, you know, if I tried to get that from her, you know, in 6 months' time, she'd probably forgot about what happened. It's not going to be as good. She's not going to be as in the moment and buzzing from having the outdoor coaching session. So grab those testimonials when something really good has happened. You know, get those case study interviews. and showcase those and use them over and over again. No, nothing wrong with repeating them. And as I said earlier, when I was talking about like your audience and the people you want to work with, do you want to work with people who only care about quick transformations or those who value a more thorough, qualified approach? Like with me, I know there are other people out there who support pet businesses when it comes to promotion, who provide templates and that kind of thing. I don't do that because I feel it's about, you know, building those storytelling skills, building those content creation skills yourself, rather than me giving you something and you going off with it and doing, you know, using something that I've created. So that's my approach. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with the other approaches, but that's just how I work, and you're going to have your approach as well. So do shout about your transformations. Do also shout about your accreditations, your qualifications, your certifications, the work that you're doing, and you know how you're really investing in you as a pet professional. So I'm going to stop talking now. This has gone on for far longer than I thought it would. I've gone off on a few tangents. We have gone over half an hour, and I did not intend it to be that long. But I would love to know what your thoughts are on this. I'd love to know if you think qualifications matter more or are results the more important thing. Do your clients care about your credentials? Let me know. If you want to carry on the conversation, come and say hi to me on social media. I'm at Rachel Spencer UK on all platforms. And if you are thinking of adding to your learning as a dog professional, then you are going to love next week's episode, because I'm talking to Heather Stevens. Heather is the author of Beyond the Breed, and we're talking about canine functional characters. It is a fascinating topic, and how knowing what they are can help you in your pet service business. So this isn't just dog trainers. This is all kinds of dog service providers. It is such an interesting topic. And if you would like to be the first to know every time a new podcast episode is out, you can also join my newsletter community as well. So you get an email every morning as the podcast, not every single morning, but obviously, but every morning that the podcast is published, it lands in your inbox. So if you want to register, head to the show notes in this episode, and I will see you on the next episode of the podcast. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you have a brilliant rest of the week. And yeah, thank you so much for supporting this podcast. And as part of supporting this podcast, you are helping me become more qualified as well, as this podcast does help to fund my business and fund my education. So let's wrap things up on whether qualifications matter. Love to know your thoughts on this, and I'll see you on the next one. Bye for now. Take care.